In March 2020, my son was in the second grade. We were on spring break, and if I remember correctly, my mom was visiting from Florida, so we were enjoying spending some time with her. The news around the world was getting ominous, though. The COVID-19 pandemic was killing thousands, then hundreds of thousands, then millions from a terrible respiratory illness worldwide. Living in California, we watched as the news spread from China west, eventually hitting Italy and then New York City really hard, and eventually spreading to our area in Southern California. On March 13th, 2020, it was determined that the kids would not be returning to school nationwide. And I just remember thinking, I'm sorry, what? In March 2020, every single U.S. state plus Washington, D.C. shut down schools. It was the first time in American history that the entire education system closed at once. And it changed everything. Parents suddenly became teachers, tech support, and full-time caregivers, all while working from home. The result? Stress, burnout, job loss, and a permanent shift in how parents view schools and teachers. Today, we'll dig into how COVID closures broke parental trust in public education and even fueled homeschooling. I also talked to my very good friend, elementary school teacher, Nicole Fox, about her experience with parents and their changing attitudes towards teachers since COVID. Chapter 1, The Great Shutdown. March 12th, 2020. Ohio, Maryland, Michigan, New Mexico, Oregon, and Kentucky were the first states to close schools. Within 2 weeks, by March 25th, all 50 states, D.C., and U.S. territories had followed. This was the first time in U.S. history that every single school system closed simultaneously. During World War II, during the Spanish flu, even after 9/11, schools had never shut down nationwide. By April, most had already announced they'd stay closed for the rest of the school year. I remember that too. They said they were going to close school for a couple of weeks after spring break and then another. And then they just said, we're closing it for the rest of the year. It was a shock. While the closures were universal, the length and reopening strategies varied. Some states resumed in-person classes in the fall of 2020, often with hybrid models where kids were doing some learning over Zoom remotely and some in person on some days. And while others, like California and much of the Northeast, remained virtual into 2021. For the 2020-2021 school year, no state kept schools completely closed for the entire year, but a significant number of states and districts within the states kept schools closed for much or all of that year. Here in Southern California, we pretty much were closed all year. In the spring, we started doing a hybrid model, but kids were only going in a couple of days a week for a couple of hours at a time. And I know the whole idea was just to get them back in school and socializing, but I don't know how effective that was exactly. California, Oregon, Washington, New Mexico, and Hawaii, many schools remain closed for the majority of the 2020-2021 year, especially in urban districts, with only limited reopening late in the spring 2021, like what we did. Northeastern states like Massachusetts, New York, and New Jersey, schools generally reopen in hybrid models, but many districts, especially in large cities who also were generally hard hit, like New York City, Boston, and Newark, offered only remote learning for extended periods. Midwestern states like Illinois, Chicago Public Schools, and other large urban districts stayed remote until early 2021, while the smaller districts, who probably weren't as hit as hard, often reopened earlier than that. The southern and the mountain states like Florida, Texas, Arkansas, and Utah, most schools reopened in the fall of 2020 for in-person learning, at least partially. In March of 2021, so a year after all the schools closed, about half of U.S. students were still in remote-only or hybrid learning, with closures concentrated in the West Coast, Northeast, and major urban districts nationwide. Chapter 2, The Parent Experience. Parents were crushed by the weight of it all. One study found over 50% of parents reported burnout during school closures. 2.3 million women left the workforce between February 2020 and February 2021, largely because schools and childcare collapsed. It always falls on women. Always. Hybrid schooling, which was offered nationwide in some regards, everywhere. It was meant to be a middle ground, but it actually made mental health worse. Juggling the two systems at once left parents just exhausted. And I remember we had like just become accustomed to the Zoom learning or the remote learning. And then the school was like, okay, now you have to bring in your kid a couple of days a week for a short period of time. I don't really know how parents who worked full time, especially out of the house at that time, were able to even do that. I've always had a flexible schedule by design, so we were able to make it work. But I had friends who just really struggle with that. They're like, but I have to go to work and they want me to drop my kid off for a couple of hours and then bring them back. And it just, some of the families that I know just would have preferred them keep it consistent. And the stress had ripple effects. Research shows parental burnout was tied to harsher parenting, more criticism, more yelling, and even more spanking. I know I had the big battle that a lot of my, especially mother friends, fellow mothers had, was they had younger children. You know, Devin at the time was 8, and they weren't as great with independent learning and doing their work. And it's like basically having them, trying to get them to do their homework all the time, every day, all day long. And, you know, it was just so frustrating. And after a while, a lot of my friends just said, forget it. I just can't do it to protect the family dynamic and unity. It was just too much. For many families, especially moms, the pandemic meant stepping back from their careers. One survey found that 13% of parents quit their jobs entirely because of school closures. Personally, I had just graduated from UC Irvine with my degree in literary journalism, and I had finally gotten like a little bit of traction in having a freelance journalism career. And COVID not only changed my ability to work, but it also changed the industry completely. So it wasn't as easy, or honestly, it was nearly impossible to get a pitch accepted and, you know, get something written all the way into fruition because the market was flooded with more freelancers because there were so many layoffs. So I had to really shift my entire career during COVID, and it kind of changed the course of everything for me. Chapter 3, Parents Watch Teachers. Something else happened during Zoom school. Parents saw what teachers were doing. For some, it sparked empathy. Wow, this job is harder than I realized. I remember watching as Devin's angel of a third grade teacher, Mrs. Morehouse, juggled 38-year-olds on this Zoom screen, all their little faces, all their little squares on the screen. And I mean, these kids are at their home. Who knows what is in the background in their environment? And they're like, Mrs. Morehouse, look at my turtle. Mrs. Morehouse, my dad's naked behind me. Mrs. Morehouse, my favorite color is purple. I mean, it was just crazy. And I think she did a really good job. She got the kids to get into these breakout groups. And I don't know how she did it. So all of the teachers gained my respect for sure during that time. But that wasn't the case for everyone. For others, it sparked doubt. They questioned teaching quality, curriculum choices, and school priorities. And when closures dragged on, especially in big cities like New York, Boston, Chicago, and Los Angeles, parents grew really frustrated. They felt that unions and bureaucracy came before kids. Bottom line, trust in schools took a big hit. Chapter 4, The Homeschooling Boom. Here's where things really changed. Before COVID, only about 3% of U.S. students, around 2.5 million kids, were homeschooled. By the fall of 2020, that number jumped to 11% of households. In Texas, homeschooling tripled from 4.5% to 12%. Among African-American families, homeschooling skyrocketed from 3% to 16% in just a few months. And then even after schools reopened, homeschooling did not fade. In 2024, 3.7 million students, about 6.7% of all U.S. kids, were homeschooled. That is still double the pre-pandemic rate. In absolute terms, that means hundreds of thousands more children are being homeschooled now than 5 years ago, with 3.7 million homeschooled students in 2024 versus 2.5 million in 2019. And homeschooling, I think homeschooling has the image that it's generally only white evangelical Christians that homeschool their children. And certainly they are a large percentage, but it's not, that's not the way it is anymore. 41% of homeschooling families now identify as non-white. And a lot of that is a lot of minorities witness that the school system wasn't teaching their kids, was kind of teaching a white-centric view of history, which has been doing, honestly, going on for a long time, but they had never directly witnessed it before. So like the literature choices, the history, all of that didn't cover anything from minority groups. I mean, honestly, I don't think it really still does from what I've seen. So they decided, no, we want to teach our children a different way. But there's a lot of different motivations. Conservatives cite that parental rights, and they want to resist mandates, and that's why they want to homeschool their children. Progressives want more inclusive education, more culturally accurate and curriculum. You know, that's a big motivating factor. So homeschooling is a lot more diverse. People have different politics, but the same decision to pull kids out of schools, public schools. Chapter 5, why parents distrust schools. So what is behind the lingering distrust? One factor is learning loss. Test scores in math and reading drop to levels not seen in decades. Today, 1 in 3 parents of elementary students are still worried that their kids haven't caught up. Now, I don't like to take a lot of credence into testing scores for what my child's ability is, but you know, that's certainly a factor, you know, that you can look at in a measure at least. Number 2, culture wars. Conservatives push back on critical race theory and LGBTQ plus topics being taught in schools. Progressives argue that schools whitewash history and lack inclusivity. 3, this is a big one, safety. School shootings, bullying, and post-COVID discipline issues feed parental anxiety. I don't have to go on and on about school shootings, but I will. I think it used to be the idea that school shootings only happened in big inner city schools, but they've happened all over the country in all kinds of different places. And if I hear one more time, oh, I didn't think it could happen here. Why do we keep saying that? It can happen anywhere. It's been happening anywhere. And sending your kid to school can be a risk. It shouldn't be, but it can be a risk. Number 4, mental health. By April 2022, 69% of schools reported higher demand for mental health services, but only 13% said they could meet the need. So there's not a lot of funding there, not a lot of resources there with a much higher need. And then 5, resources. Parents see overcrowded classrooms, teacher shortages, and funding gaps and wonder if alternatives could serve their kids better. My child goes to a public school here, and I think his classes have at least 30 to 35 kids in each one. That's a big class. That's a lot of 13 and 14-year-old kids. God bless the teachers. But once families saw the alternatives to public school or traditional schooling. There were charter schools, micro schools, homeschooling. Many just didn't want to go back. Here's the lasting impact. Parents today are more vocal, more politically active, and less willing to simply trust the system. Post-COVID, parents want a more customized education. They want more transparency from teachers and schools, and they want more choice in how their kids learn, because not every kid can learn in a traditional way, and schools cannot always adapt to every individual, you know, way of, you know, kids' way of learning. The scars of school closures haven't faded, and they're reshaping the future of education in America. So how do teachers feel about how parents' attitudes have changed after COVID? Up next, I spoke to my friend and elementary school teacher, Nicole Fox, about her experience during and after COVID, both as a full-time teacher and a mother to two boys. All right, so we're here today in my living room with my very good friend, Nicole Fox.
Hello.
If you follow me on 45 Left or Right podcast, you might recognize the voice when she starts speaking. And today I'm just going to talk about education. And basically there seems to be a lot of like growing disdain for teachers, you know, especially on social media. And Nicole is a teacher, so she's going to talk about that. So tell me, Nicole, how long have you been a teacher? You know, tell me a little bit about your education, how long you've been a teacher, and where you've taught, and those sort of things.
Okay, so I've been a teacher for 14 years. I've been in the education system for about 18. I was doing the math last night to make sure. For about 18 years. I have a bachelor's degree and my teaching credential from University of Redlands, and I have my master's degree in education with an emphasis on autism spectrum disorders from Arizona State University.
Wow, awesome. And you've taught in, what grades have you taught?
Taught a lot. I worked middle school when I first started teaching. I wasn't really teaching, I was working in the AVID program. And then I have taught personally first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade.
Right.
And I did a lot of subbing in middle school, so 6, 7, 8, and a little bit in high school.
Okay, okay.
And I taught both here in Yucaipa and at a charter school in San Jacinto.
Okay. Oh, it was a charter school.
It was a charter school.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that, actually. And mostly you've taught like the fourth and fifth grade,
yes.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, most of like about 11 years of it was fourth and fifth grade.
Okay.
Kind of switching off between the two of them.
Right. Yeah. That's a good age group here. I need to steal this because I forgot.
Super ultra top secret passcode.
Oh. If y'all haven't noticed, Nicole's a very good friend of mine.
We're here.
Hi. Okay. So, I don't know if maybe I've just been paying attention more or what, but when I'm on social media and people are talking about education, there's just such a like, ire toward teachers and, you know, all these ideas that you're indoctrinating children.
Oh,
and just, you know, it's a lot of really negative things. So, you know, in your 14 years of experience, have you noticed a change in attitudes toward teachers over the course of your career? And then just what has been the change?
I have noticed. I'm lucky enough where I haven't had too much of it directed at me necessarily, but I have noticed that big shift. Mm-hmm. I noticed like a lack of what seems like enthusiasm for people in their children's education in general. And I do think that that part at least comes from maybe a little bit of the fact that we're all two-income households now. So parents are working all the time. You don't have that one parent who's constantly there to do homework, who's constantly there to like make sure kids are getting correct education. And so I don't know how much of that is what's kind of leading into, because like parents are tired when they come home.
Yeah.
So when their kids come home and the teacher's like, hey, you know, little Jimmy got in trouble again, you know, the parents don't necessarily, they're like, because I've been there.
right, yeah,
You know, just don't be dumb. Like, right. Don't do dumb things. Like, because I'm tired when I come home. Like, I don't want to deal with the fact that, you know, my son was rude to the teacher.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we do go over, like, hey, let's not be rude to the teacher. Mm-hmm. Like, what happened? But I think a lot of it is a lot of people are, like, media hungry. So, oh, my child is being picked on at school. If I throw that out on Instagram, now people are going to be like, oh, woe is me. Like,
yeah.
And I think that kind of like speeds it up a little bit. Like, because it's not just like a me complaining to my friend, like, what's wrong with this teacher? It's
right.
Like, now I'm telling everybody. But the indoctrinating thing, I think, is hilarious.
Right.
Because, like, if I was going to indoctrinate your children,
right.
Bring me a Starbucks every day. Even less than that, like, hey, can we, like, pretend to do our work at school? Like, just while you're here.
Yeah.
Like, just pretend.
Right. Yeah.
But I am lucky enough not to have had somebody who I thought was doing that to my child. So, and I don't think that happens too much in this area where we live.
Yeah.
But I can honestly tell you, though, if somebody was trying to do something like that and, like, tell my child that it's okay to do something that I don't believe in, I would probably be, like, on blast. But I think it happens a lot less. And I think kids are a lot less susceptible to it than their parents think.
Interesting.
Because, like, have you ever tried to convince a 13-year-old to do something?
Yes.
You have one.
Yes.
I have one.
It's impossible.
Like, seriously, if you were going to indoctrinate Devin, like, it would be, hey, use soap in the shower.
Yes, it would.
It wouldn't be like hey, you need to, put on pink shoes with purple polka dots.
Yeah.
It would be a very basic level.
Yeah.
So I think parents just, like, they're more hungry for the attention, maybe. And I don't know that I want to say it that way.
Right.
But just.
Right.
But it does. It's always, like, negative towards the teachers.
Yeah.
The kid gets in trouble. Oh, the teacher doesn't like it.
Yeah.
Like, and it has been getting worse and worse and worse. Instead of, like, let's have our child take responsibility. It's, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask about that. It's like I did some research on Reddit, you know, why not? And a lot of it was from teachers saying there's just less accountability, you know, or the expectation of accountability in children. You know, we definitely keep our kids accountable, but, you know, probably maybe to a fault sometimes, but for me, but you know, it's this, like, blame the teacher, blame the school, blame the district versus, hey, your kid's being a little jerk, you know?
And I'll be like, I know.
Yeah.
I know he is in a mood.
Oh, I wasn't meaning your child.
But I know, but that's how I would be as a parent. The first thing I think is, like, I know. Like, okay, what are we going to do to fix it? And then it's, like, on the other side of that, like, as the parent saying, like, it's everybody else's fault.
Right.
And that's kind of where we are as a culture. It's the lawsuit. Like, everybody wants to sue. Like, that's the dress code issues are all lawsuits. You know, it's like, my child didn't do anything wrong. You as a school did something wrong. And I don't know. I think that shift happened more, it was going that way before COVID.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily a COVID.
We were on a downhill slide before COVID, but COVID just exploded it.
Oh.
And since COVID's when we've seen, like, people just don't bring their kids to school anymore. Like, there'll be kids just gone.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Jeez.
If you think about it, and it doesn't seem like a lot, but I had a lot of children who were gone from the school year. I had about 10 kids who missed 15 days of school or more.
Wow.
And then most of my kids missed 5 to 6 days of school, which doesn't sound like a lot over the course of a school year, but that's like 80% absent rate. Like, that's a lot. And when you think about what they're missing, and then the parents are just like, oh, they just didn't want to come to school. Or, oh, we just went to Disneyland. And I'm like, there's a little cushion there.
Right, yeah.
But where do we say, hey, you just have to go?
Yeah, yeah. Right. exactly. Like, so I know you don't want
to
go.
If we can't even get them to come to school, and then when they get there, they're getting in trouble, and then the parents aren't taking responsibility for the fact that they're absent, or that they're getting in trouble, or that they're not doing their work, it just becomes this cycle of where they're not going to want to come to school because now they don't know what's going on. They're always getting in trouble when they're there.
Right.
Their parents are getting mad at them, or their parents are just saying, don't listen to the teacher. We've had that. I've had lots of friends that have had that.
Really?
Where they're like, yeah, the kid just came back and said, nope, I was told not to listen to you anymore. I'm just like, but
how can you teach them?
Like, you can't teach them if, yeah. So it's an interesting cycle.
But I wonder what it, now COVID obviously was awful. And here in California, what did we miss a year, over a year?
We closed down in March.
Right.
March 13th. Friday the 13th.
Ah, yes.
That's how I remember. Uh-huh. So we closed down in March. So they missed basically most of the third trimester of school. Which for us, like, that's when, you know, state testing is, finals. And also that's when we do the fun things.
That's true.
I do all the fun things past spring break.
Oh, yeah. Painting.
Painting and projects and all the cool things. So they missed that part of 1 year. And then they missed pretty much the entire next year.
Yeah.
So whatever grades they missed. My son was, he missed most of first, or the last part of first grade and all of second grade.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine missed
second and then third.
Second and third. Yeah. Yeah. So I wonder, I don't know. I mean, it was awful. But there was still instruction if you participated
you know.
So I don't know. I'm sure there's studies out there about are still coming out about, like, the influence of COVID, not only on teaching or in education, but in work culture and that sort of thing.
And I think you see two divergent paths from parents coming out of COVID. You had the ones, especially like right after COVID, that were like, oh, thank you, teachers.
Oh,
please take this child away.
That was me.
I cannot homeschool. And then you do have a lot of parents that are like, well, we homeschooled, so we can do that now. And I think that might be where we're getting a lot of the kind of difference of opinion there. A lot of those parents that were probably grateful and loved education, they're now homeschooling their children.
Oh.
Those that can have pulled their kids.
Interesting.
So the ones that we have left in the public education system are the ones that don't want their kids at home.
Right.
Or the ones like us that are full-time working moms.
Right.
And full-time working dads, that two-income household, that's, they have to have their kids go somewhere because they can't homeschool.
Yeah.
And they can't afford a private school.
Right.
So a lot of the ones that are those quality parents have since pulled their kids from public education.
Oh, interesting.
So maybe that's why we're also seeing the, the grumpiness, because those are the ones that are like, oh, teachers are so mean. My kid is perfect. And
they stayed home with them.
I was like, please go away.
Oh, I just, Devin, you know, hasn't had too many behavior problems, but I remember he's in the second grade and they went on spring break, and then all of a sudden
they did not go back
and they sent home packets and stuff for us to do. And he was in the second grade. It was probably a good grade to miss, but he said to me, well, Miss Joaquin doesn't do it that way. And I was like, oh God, we're in trouble. That was the first attitude that child ever gave me. And I just determined, we're gonna do the best we can here, but I am not a teacher, I am not trained for this, and we will kill each other.
I am not trained for it. I am a teacher, and I was not trained for that.
Yeah.
For having two kids at home.
Yeah.
And I was teaching on the computer at the same time. And I just chuck pins like, shush, shush.
We didn't know each other very well. Actually, maybe not. Not really at all at the time. So we really needed each other during that. We could have, like, done a switch off or something. All right. I got to find them. There. They're super secret.
Top secret. That's right.
Okay. Well, we actually just talked about this. How did COVID change how parents treat teachers? So I know for me, I definitely gained a very, I've always appreciated teachers because I just can't do that job. But, and I have a lot of friends who are teachers, but I came out of COVID going, holy crap, thank you, thank you, thank you. Do you want Starbucks every day? Do you want a gift card? Like, I will do anything for you because I do appreciate what you did.
I've talked to a lot of parents that were just like, I can't do what you do. And I was like, but what we were doing during COVID was very different. It wasn't, that's not education.
Yeah.
But the parents that really appreciated it and really tried, they were also the parents who were sitting down with the kids when they could to do the work.
Yeah.
They were the ones that were like, okay, let's find something to do to make what we have work. But then we also had the parents who couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Because they were working full time. And we had a lot of kids that just got left home by themselves.
Oh, man. Like,
little tiny kids home by themselves because who's going to watch them?
Yeah.
There was no daycare. There was no, like... And I think that's where parents just got overwhelmed and then they just said, we're done.
Right. We're not doing this.
We're not doing this.
Yeah.
And that mindset kind of stuck with some of them. Like, okay, well, now school's got it. Like, I don't have to worry about it anymore because school has it.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, but then, no.
Yeah. We still need that out. Especially as they get older. Yeah. You know? I didn't tell you about this. Devin got into both honors English and math, which is wonderful, but I'm also like, that workload is going to be substantial. So we're trying to decide if we're going to do that, you know, if we're going to have him do both, but we will have to help him, you know. Fortunately, Jeff's good at the math and I'm good at the English, but I also like do this and Jeff works and it's
a lot,
and but I want him to be smart. And I want
you want him to be... to live up to his potential and to do all the fun things.
Yep. Exactly.
But at the same time...
Sorry. I was trying to do that.
I'm illiterate.
When you weren't talking. But that didn't work out. Sorry. Good.
But yeah, and I get it. Like, it's hard. You want your child to meet their potential, but at the same time, you want them to, like, be able to manage it on their own. Because it is Devin's education.
Right, yeah.
He does need to be able to manage it on his own, and you should just be checking in because we are busy, and when I get home, it's like, okay, homework, dinner, practice.
Right.
There's no time for homework.
Yeah.
So you don't want too much because then I'm like, okay, well, then that's what we're doing every single night till 11 p.m.
Exactly, exactly.
It's a balance.
Oh, it's going to be interesting, that's for sure. Well, okay, so you are now teaching, you were teaching fourth and fifth. This year you did a second
one,
first,
two combo.
And then next year you'll do first grade. How do you handle negativity from parents? Like, what do you do? And
you have to learn to spin it.
Yeah.
And I'm, most days I'm pretty good at it.
I think so.
I spin it pretty well, but you have to just be able to listen because most of the time that's all they want. They just want somebody to vent to. And so if you just sit there and, like, smile and nod, which I'm really good at. if you just sit there and smile and nod, then you can usually just, they vent it, and then they're better. And I'm like, okay, well, let's work. Like, what do we want to do to fix the problem?
Right.
So I had one where she said that her daughter told me that, or she, her daughter told her that I was... I was like picking on her. I wouldn't let her do the things. She wasn't being allowed to go to the bathroom or to the nurse when she wanted. And I was just like, and the mom just kind of ranted to me for a really long time.
Right.
And I was like, okay, well, this is what happened. She goes to the bathroom and to the nurse, but she can't go to the bathroom and to the nurse, Devin, a million times a day.
Yes.
You know, and she would ask every time that math would start. She would need to go to the nurse. Every time that we would start a writing assignment, she would have to go to the bathroom. And I was like, so I told her, I was like, I did have to limit.
Right.
She can go to the nurse once or twice a week. Now, if I do see her actually like bleeding or dying on the floor, of course I'm going to send your daughter to the nurse.
Yes.
But, you know, she can go to the bathroom at recess and lunch.
Yeah.
Which little people get lots of recesses.
They do a lot of recesses.
So I'm like, she can go to the bathroom at recess and lunch, and then if she needs to go in an emergency, you know, once per day.
Right.
If there's something going on, like, you know, an issue, like, of course I'll let her go as much as she needs.
Right.
But
yeah,
like, you can't be gone all day, every day.
Right.
And avoiding. Task
avoidance is real. Task avoidance, yeah.
So it's like, usually then once they vent, and then you kind of just, well, this is what happened.
Right.
Most of the parents bring it down. Like, they bring it down a notch. And I find as long as you talk to people like they're humans.
Right. Yeah.
Because I don't know everything. The child is theirs. They know their child more than I do because they're the parent. And usually once you just talk to people like they're humans, you don't really have too much.
Right.
Have I been screamed at? Of course.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Quite a few times, but it's just like, okay.
It's just like, mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and this is why your child is the way they are. Same thing. Like,
exactly.
You're mad that he's not doing the work, but I couldn't get him to take his paper out of the desk.
Mm, right.
Well, he needed help. I can't help him if his paper's in his desk.
Right.
And I can't make him take the paper out of the desk.
Right.
So you can scream at me all you want, but I can't help a child who won't get the paper out.
Right. Yes.
So
you can't put your hands on that child.
Yeah, and move them out of the way and get paper.
Yeah,
like, the paper was in the desk. He refused to get it out of his desk. So then I couldn't help him.
Mm-hmm.
I gave him 3 hours of me attempting to help him.
Right.
So he didn't get to watch the movie like because he didn't finish the work.
Yeah.
Well, he needed help. He has to get the paper out and then be willing to write on the paper. I can't help you if you're not going to help yourself.
Yeah.
So has there been screaming? Yes.
Mm.
Most of the time, the parents are just like, hey, can you tell me what happened?
Right.
At least the ones that I've come in contact
with. Yeah, yeah.
But I have found that most of the time, you just, hey, okay, tell me what's going on.
Right.
Give the parent that chance to vent.
Right.
And then that usually brings it down because people just, they just want to be
heard. They
want
to be heard. Yep.
Whether it's on social media and the people going, oh, that's so mean, or, and then that amps it up, or just, talk to me. Okay, let's bring it down.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we can find the common cure here.
Right.
How do we fix it?
Yeah. I know I worked for Sprint for a year over the phone, customer service, horrible, horrible. But that is what I learned is people just want you, even if I'm thinking, honestly, and I'm not saying this would be what you're thinking as a teacher, but when people have phone problems, I'm thinking, you're an idiot. Just turn it on and turn it off.
I do that.
All they want to do is for someone to hear and say, oh, gosh, I'm so sorry that happened to you, or I'm sorry you're going through this. You know, let me see what I can do to help. I was a master at that. Master. And then I'd say, turn your phone on, turn it off, and then turn it back on.
Because I have to check the button. I have to check the box.
And then
like that, we did it. And once we do that, then I'll move on to the next step. But we have to do that first.
Customer service voice.
And you know what? I've called those people, and I'm like, I am so sorry. I am so frustrated now.
Right.
I know it's not your fault, and I always preface it. I know it's not your fault.
Yeah.
But this happened, and it keeps happening. Fix it.
Right. Yeah. Please. Yeah.
And I've gotten, like, I should have a counseling degree. I don't have one.
I thought that's what an education degree was.
No. Completely separate. But I need one, because the amount of times that parents will tell me other things that are happening in their life, and I'm just like, I don't need to know that.
Oh, my goodness.
But they need somebody to listen.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
usually that is a great way to start the conversation and, like, build that trust.
Right.
It's just be like, oh, I'm so sorry that your sister did that.
Right. Like, okay, let's move on.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a teacher or a parent start off maybe negative or cold to you in the beginning where you were like, uh-oh, this is going to be a problem, and it end up being okay?
Yeah, or, okay. I actually have my best friend actually really intimidated me. Like, she was, because she's just very straightforward.
Yeah, yeah.
And I met her because I had her son.
Mm.
And we're literally best friends.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I fly to go see her.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple of parents that are like that. It's just because they're very, like, standoffish.
Yeah.
And they're just, this is what we're doing.
Right, yeah.
And one of them, their son was on, different friend, but their son was on an IEP, and I didn't know.
Oh.
And they weren't happy that he got put in my class. It was my first year at the school, so I was the new teacher.
Oh, right.
They had the most amazing teacher first.
Of course.
They got pulled out of her class, and trust me, that teacher is amazing. I love her. Yeah, Mrs. Douglas.
Oh,
they
gosh.
They got pulled from her class and put into mine.
Okay.
And I was new to the school, so they didn't know me.
Yeah.
The son had an IEP, so he shouldn't have been moved.
Oh.
But he was. Mm. And they were just like, well, I don't understand. Like, tell me about yourself. And what, right. Like, my child was perfect in this class, and they got along so well. I was like, well, they've been in there for 4 days.
Right. Yeah.
But now I've had multiple of their children, and we're friends. Like, I can call her right now and be like, hey. So it's just, you just kind of have to, like I said, just listen.
Right.
Be yourself. But just, hi, this is me.
Right.
And I've had some parents who were sketch.
I bet.
Some sketchy parents.
Yeah.
But usually, you know, it's like one of them looked like I don't know.
Right.
Like he's fresh out of jail.
Oh, gosh.
Like face, neck, tattoos.
I mean.
And like, he was just like big muscle guy. And he walked up to me. But he was like all for his daughter's education. She's going to go to Harvard. She's going to be a veterinarian. And I was like, he's trying to fight that systemic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I was just like, go for it.
Yeah.
How can I help you?
Right. Yeah.
And I find that most of the time when you show them that you care.
Yeah.
Even the most hardcore parents that are, like, upset that their child's in your classroom.
Right. I can't imagine anybody being upset that they're in your classroom, but I...
Besides me.
Well,
I don't want to be there.
Well, you know, I remember I knew you as Mrs. Fox before I knew you as my friend Nicole, and everyone was like, oh, Devin, you have to get Devin in Mrs. Fox's class. You have to get Devin in Mrs. Fox's class. Because Mrs. Fox is good with wiggly boys. And kids with IEPs, you know, it seems. And I don't do that. I don't, you know, request teachers. Fortunately, you're in his life anyway, so that's good. But he got Mrs. Douglas for fourth grade, and she was wonderful. And Mrs. Lamb for fifth grade, and she was wonderful. So it all worked out.
It does.
But, you know, I get it, too. New teacher, you know, you're like, well, who is this, you know?
Yep.
Especially elementary, you're not switching teachers.
Yeah.
You've got...
Even if, like, you could be, like, even right now, 14 years in, if I walked into a new school, those people don't know me.
Yeah.
Like, being in this community, I know some people.
Yes.
But I don't necessarily, like, you don't have that reputation.
Yeah.
So switching schools is hard because then you're starting all over. And, like, once you're there a year, then people are like, oh, okay, she's fine.
Right.
But it's a hard thing.
Yeah.
Because you get your teachers, or on the flip side of that, you get the ones that don't have a good reputation. Or you had a really bad experience with somebody.
Right.
So you told me, and I'm like, then I immediately go in on the offensive.
Right.
Or the defensive, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I go in, and I'm like, no, like, my child will not be in her class. Like, absolutely not. She's awful. Like, and it could be the best experience ever. Because I've definitely had some kids in my class that I'm just like, that wasn't a good fit. It's never bad, but it's just like, I don't think that I was the best teacher for that child. I think so-and-so for this reason would have been a better teacher.
Yeah.
And you may do, but there are definitely some, because I've had siblings that I like loved one of them, and then the other one I'm like, oh my gosh.
Wow.
Like, because siblings are different.
They are very different. Yeah.
And you're just like, well, I might not have been the best fit for that child.
Right.
But most teachers, you're going to be fine, because even if it's not like the best.
Right.
It's still going to be a great year.
Yeah.
But there are some teachers that I could see where parents would be like, absolutely not.
Mm, right.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Yeah. Fifth grade, you know, was one year in particular that people were like, oh, you have to get Devin in with Mrs. Fox. And I didn't know you at that time. And, but again, I just don't believe in that. And he ended up had Mrs. Lamb, and she was who he needed that year.
Yes.
Exactly who he needed.
Even if it's, you're worried at the beginning, it usually is like, okay, well, that worked.
Yeah.
And now I have had some experiences on the offside with my own children where I'd be like, I will tell not necessarily who my child needs.
Right.
But I will say who my child does not need. Because it wouldn't be fair to the teacher.
Yeah.
Or to the rest of the class.
Right.
Or to my child. Or to me.
Right.
Because I just knew personalities would clash. Because my child has a very strong personality.
Yes.
But he's had some teachers that are like, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Because I don't request necessarily like who they get, but yeah. Because I usually just say, you know what, that's not going to be a good fit. That teacher's too much of this, and it would not work well with my child.
Right. Yeah.
But I have had teachers that I was like, sorry, Ben.
Right.
Like, it's going to be a long year.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And we get through them.
We get through them. Exactly.
But
you do.
Yeah, you just. Some personalities clash, and if you have a child like Devin who's just wonderful all the way around,
he's so nice.
And like he gets along with most people,
yeah,
they're gonna do fine.
Yeah,
if you have a child with a strong personality or that needs something,
right,
then you're gonna have to be a little bit pickier with your teacher choice.
That's true, yeah,
but most of the time,
it's good. But here is the key, you have to send your child to school.
Yes.
To benefit from the education.
Yes.
I think it's interesting if people complain about, you know, the education their child's getting when they're not sending them to school like they should, you know.
Definitely.
I remember one of the first IEP meetings we had about Devin for his speech. They were like, oh, wow, his percentage of going to school is so good. And we were like, yeah, of course it is. Like, we, you know, like, it never occurred to us not to send him to school.
That is a bigger question. And I think if you see a lot of these parents who, circling back, they're the ones that are the most grumpy and, like, have the most negative things to say about our education system and our teachers.
Right.
You look at the numbers. Those are the kids that... probably are on IEPs because they don't have the knowledge to make it to the next grade without help.
Right.
And that's what IEPs are for. Right. You know, my child's on an IEP. Like, I get it. So I'm like, they have that, but then it's like, a lot of times it's hard for us to get them IEPs and get them qualified because they're not at school. They're not at school because they're not having fun. They're not having fun because they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So nobody wants them in their group. And that starts all the way down.
Yeah.
Like, in TK and kinder.
Oh.
And especially in our lower grades, a lot of the parents are like, oh, well, it's just kindergarten.
Oh, right.
Oh, it's just TK.
I'm right.
Like, but the amount of stuff that they do in kindergarten.
Oh, yeah. Especially now.
So much.
They're expected to be able to read by the end of kindergarten.
And I had a really, really, really smart first grader, and she missed probably about 20 days of school.
Oh, wow.
And the parents were just like, oh, that's fine. She was super smart.
Yeah.
That's great. She didn't really need first grade. You know, she could read. She could do the thing. She was smart. But it's going to catch up with her.
Yeah.
Because if you're missing 20 days of school every year.
Yeah.
Then, and especially when you get to fourth and fifth grade, if you miss one day of math, that's huge.
Yeah.
Because they can't go circle back to those concepts.
That's true.
So it's like, get your kid to school.
Right.
Let them learn.
Mm-hmm.
Make friends. Have fun.
Yeah.
Then they'll... be there, then they'll come home with happy experiences more often, and then you won't have to be grumpy about all the things that your child is doing wrong in school.
That's true. I know.
And that's not saying that some people do have a reason to be mad at schools.
Sure.
It does happen.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that there are teachers that are, like I said, indoctrinating children.
Right.
And all that stuff. But I'm like, most of them?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah. You just want them to... pick up their piece of paper
and put it on the desk.
Put it on the desk.
So I can like help you with the things. But yeah, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a funny concept.
Yeah. So are you glad we're on summer break right now?
Always. Should my children be at school so I don't have them? Yes.
Well, that means something. My child right now is walking the dog. So we can do this. I know. I'm glad you guys get breaks.
And teachers do. Like,
yeah.
We, and that was one of the things. Like, people are like, well, you're getting paid. Technically, I'm not.
Right.
Because I'm a 10-month employee.
Okay.
So I don't get paid for summer. My bank splits it up for me. So I have a paycheck in the summer,
right.
But it's not a paycheck.
Yeah.
But I'm a 10-month contract employee.
Oh.
So I don't get paid for summer. But my brain needs summer.
Yeah.
I need it to kind of just refresh, let the things go that bothered me last year.
Because
towards the end of the year, everything bothers you.
I bet.
Starting in April and May.
Yes.
December.
May.
We hate May. And the first couple of weeks of June are equally as bad.
Yes, especially if your child plays baseball.
Sports in general. So teachers do, they need those breaks built in.
Yeah.
Like, by Thanksgiving, we are dying.
Yeah.
Because we've gone from September 3rd, or whatever Memorial Day falls.
Yeah.
And we usually don't have a break in October.
Yeah.
Some schools do have a fall break, where they get, like, a couple days off in October.
Not us.
We do not.
No.
My friends in Tennessee tell me about all the days off they have, and I'm like,
I think Tennessee only goes to school 160 days.
Yeah, they don't have as many days on their contract. Mm-hmm. That's why California teachers got paid more, because we put more days on our contract. So that happened in the 90s. I learned that one from a really old teacher.
I learned from last year's podcast that I
love it. So they, so come like Thanksgiving break, we're like, oh, thank
goodness. Oh, our dad. Yeah.
And then Christmas break is like all full of all the Christmas things. Yeah. And so that's not really a break.
No.
No. But those breaks are built in because teachers need them. We are fried.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
And then come summer, we're like, okay, okay. We're just, we got to make it to summer. And then we are like,
we survived. Yeah, I know. I really, I mean, I don't know how you do it. I like my child and I like other children. I like your children a lot. but I couldn't be with all of the children. I just don't have patience, you know, for them. And that's why I did not go into education. But I just, you know, I will always give the gift certificates and the Christmas presents because I really appreciate it. Yeah. And also, there's been so many teachers in Devin's life as he's gone through that have been very important. Like, Mrs. Lindley was like, really fought for him to make sure he had the right speech.
She was my teacher, too.
I know. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? And she still calls him a keeper. I know. Oh, yeah. She's definitely going to get this one. She still calls him a keeper, you know. And then there's been teachers throughout the way. Last year, Mrs. Courtney for math really just, I don't know, just encouraged
and if you can
him.
Find
so
a good math teacher.
Oh, yeah.
That is. That's
and it's
hard.
Not that the other ones he's had haven't been good. It's just she was exceptional.
And that's because math is so hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
I know. He did not get those genes from me.
But if you can find a teacher that can make a kid passionate about math.
Yeah. He loves it.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. With his honors, you know, the question of honors math or honors English, he's like, well, I definitely want to do honors math. You know, that's a given. Yeah. He's just not sure. Well, he wants to do it. We aren't sure. He should do honors English, too. I'm like, I don't want you burned out by the time you're 14 years old. I've been there, you know. But that's a whole other thing. But I appreciate you coming on in my house today with Minnie.
On the couch.
Cameras on the couch. All the lights. Nicole was like, what the? What is this? I really appreciate it. And if you listen to this podcast, she'll be on again, I'm sure, talking about sports things and
things.
Education, of course, and I'm sure what I'm like as a friend. I'm just, yeah.
Most amazing.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
My husband and I went to my eighth graders' back to school night last week, and one reaction from one teacher in particular made us appreciate our son's public school so much. We introduced ourselves as Devin's parents to his science teacher, and her face just lit up. You're Devin's parents? Oh, I just love him! I understand that not everyone has a public school like ours, and even within my son's school, maybe not everybody has had a good experience. But I do find myself defending our public school system because it isn't all bad. And in fact, a lot of it is really good. And it is vital that every child receive a free public education in this country. We need critical thinking skills now more than ever. How much of our child's experience is up to us as parents? If we are skeptical or negative about our child's school, does it rub off on our kids? and then influence their education at whatever school they're at, whether it's public, private, charter school, or even homeschool. What part should parents have in our child's education? Thank you for watching the Journalism of Everything podcast. I'm on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all of the other apps where you can get podcasts. But especially check out my YouTube page, Journ of Everything, because I'm putting a lot of effort into making unique videos for that.